Blog Talk Radio.
In the beginning was the beat, and the beat was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
Night at 9 o'clock, and this is Dare to Win. The question we'll be focusing on tonight: what does the economic future of the Black community look like, and how can we prepare our children? These and more right after the music break. Don't touch that dial. We'll be right back.
Was the rhythm of God, and the rhythm of God is the harmony of humanity, and where there is harmony, there is peace.
People to self-determination, liberation, and sovereignty. Good evening, family, and welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us weekly program, where we have a sobering conversation about the economic plight of Black people and the imperative that we build the global economic machinery that will free us and once again put us on the path of making history. We at Us Lifting Us have developed an exact methodology on how to build this machinery and pass it forward to our children and future generations. To join this evening's conversation, call 929-477-2789. Press the number 1 on your phone if you want to make a comment or ask a question. If you're on your computer, go to uslifting.com. That's uslifting.com. Click on the Ulu Radio tab, then click on Listen Live. My name is Brother Kimbizi, and I am your host for this evening's discussion. I am joined tonight by Brother Shabaka, who, like myself, is a board member of Us Lifting Us. We've got a great show for this evening, so let's jump right in. Brother Shabaka, how are you feeling? And please say a few words to our listeners.
Greeting, Brother Kimbizi, and greeting, family, listening audience. My pleasure to be here. I think we have a very enlightening, hopefully, the family will participate with questions or discussion, and I can't wait to begin. Thank you so much.
Okay, then, well, let's jump right in. Brother Shabaka, tell our listeners, from your vantage point, what does the economic future of the black community look like in June of 2019?
Well, thank you, brother, for that question. And to sort of like lay a foundation for further stimulation into this topic, I'd like to go back to what you asked about the black community. And that in itself is an interesting topic. And so what I did was went back to Webster. It's one of the premier dictionaries that is used, particularly when discussing various words in the English language. And we are in the U.S., which uses the word English. I know it's not our original tongue, but we've been captured for quite a while. And some of us have become quite proficient in its use. But I want to go back to lay a foundation to see how we can enter this arena in which you talked about. And Webster tells us that community, as it sees it, defines it, or one of its definition has many, depending on the context, but I thought this definition really suited for our discussion tonight, is a body of persons, people, or nations, countries, sovereign entities, having a common history or common social, economic, and political interests. All right, so the implication, if one look at that, is that you might not necessarily have to be in in the same geographical area, but as long as you have a common history, social, economic, and political interests, Webster field that you constitute constitute the definitions of a community. Now, I'd like to take a look at that a little bit further for our points, because we talk about the black community. Yes, we do have a common history, social life, culture. Yes, we have developed that in spite of the fact that our culture had been somewhat destroyed. Remnants of that has survived, but for the most part, we were not allowed to speak our language, pray to our gods, celebrate our festivals, our customs, not transmit those to our kids. We were not allowed to do that, but we have been able to maintain a survival in which some of those elements have been transmitted. Not many, but some. So we have sort of a cultural, social, political interests can be debated, particularly in the U.S. as we are approaching this election year. It's not clear what it is that some of us want, other than the fact instinctively we want to be free. Economics, clearly, we do not control the economics of wherever we live, whether we're in groups, in a common area we live. We do not control the economics, and economics is controlled by people outside. So Dr. Claude Anderson used the phrase that we don't constitute a community, but we do constitute a neighborhood. In other words, we're able to come, live, and plant. Now, as we further talk about that, to get further to the question that you asked earlier, one of the things, if we don't if we don't have an economy or an economic, a socioeconomic arrangement, and we're not really clear about our political interests, in other words, how to promote our culture, how to promote that economic interest, then it's very difficult for us to be able to plan our future and be able to transmit from our future things that we would like to pass down to our the next generation. And you might say, well, why is this? Well, ever since we were captured, brought here, and enslaved, and then even after this period, no permission was extended to us. There was no negotiation after the slave period ended for what it was that we would like to do. We would just automatically assume that we wanted to do whatever the captives who captured us willed us to do. So as a consequence, we have been on a survival mode ever since we were here, surviving slavery, the post-slavery period, Jim Crow, black codes, slave codes, whatever, integration, a survival mode. Consequently, we had not laid down a foundation by which we could plan, particularly plan in the future, about what an economy that would represent us as a body, not necessarily represent us as individuals, but represent us as a body. And consequently, as a result of that, we find ourselves amidst stress. In addition to that, we look at the tools that is usually used by other elements of the society that are not African, particularly the European community, whom we call white, obviously the Jewish community, Asian community, and in some degree the Latino community, who's recent immigrants to this area, use various tools, particularly the media. And that media is used to propagate his economic and political interests. We don't have that luxury. When you look at integration, all right, some years back, we found out that it inhibited us from doing things because we had the false notion that when we integrated, we would have equal relationships with whites. It wasn't until that process done where we basically left what we had. We were forced by segregation, but in being forced to stay together by segregation, we were able to build an economy, and in some places, a very successful economy that later was disrupted and destroyed by the dominant community. So what we see as we're moving on economically, is that there's forces that have prevented us, laid the foundation by which we had difficulties in organizing ourselves, all right, to begin to think distinctly what are our interests as a group, as a collective, all right, and you see a lot of folks use the term that the Europeans might plan 20, 30 years down the road, the Chinese might plan 100 years down the road, and you, the Africans, plan for the next few minutes. Don't even get beyond a day. So and that's because we're constantly in a survival mode, and I don't want to make it seem to the listening audience that for some reason this indicates our inferiority. It's just the mere fact that we have not had the control economically, politically, to control. But we've had the insight, and we really need to give ourselves a lot of credit, all right, in surviving, being by able to identify quickly what it is that we need to survive, moving on it, and allow to at least survive the next day. What are the things facing us now and as we look forward? Well, the wealth gap is highly increasing between people of African descent, people of European descent, and even between people of Asian descent. So we're not doing that well. Our schools, in particular, some of the large Ivy League schools, some of the profitable private schools that Europeans send their kids, teach them to become managers, owners of industry. Our schools, unfortunately, some of our well-known black historical institutions teaches us to get a job. Now, I'd like you to think about that. One set of schools from one community teaches them to become owners and managers of their own destiny, and the other one is teaching us to get a job. All right, and so we see a fundamental difference. We're trying to get a job. As getting a job, we get a wage or a salary. All right, we cannot pass on that wage or salary to our offspring, the next generation. But if you have if you are owners of industry, if you're the owner of a factory, you can pass on through inheritance down to the next generation. And Europeans see that because they see themselves beyond. They see themselves beyond just their mere generation. They see themselves intergenerationally, particularly in sustaining a control. So, brother, when we look at, to get back to your question, as I'm outlining some of these things that I've observed, and hopefully some of the things that the listening audience and family members are observing, the economic conditions, political conditions that we're experiencing in the U.S. is not shaping us for ownership, for sovereignty, control over our destiny. It's doing the reverse. Providing a foundation for us to sustain being enslaved, but in a different form. And in this form, we are able to get a few crumbs. The most important thing is the institutions of learning, what they're teaching. And later on, I will discuss what I think they should be such that we can pass on something to our youth and empower them to continue as we develop in this economy. But right now we have to see that we're not doing that. Another trapping, again, this is not our fault. We're born into the society. We're educated into the society. We are indoctrinated by leaders who sometimes think that they have our best interest, but because they were indoctrinated, all right, their actions have not been beneficial to us. For a case in point, and I'm sure that you've seen on television some of our brothers and sisters who are athletically well endowed, all right, and find out that, well, they don't have the money to pay the huge tuition that is necessary and get what they figure is a college education or university education. All right, so they get scholarships. Athletic scholarships, but they come only to find that the NCAA and all the sponsors and everything that brings them together sets up a sort of like a pimp prostitute kind of relationship. In other words, the pimp is the NAACP, and the sponsors that sponsors have you see these games, and then we get the few crumbs as a consequence of this relationship. But see, our parents push this. Well, why do our parents push this? Because they themselves think that it's a blessing that their child, number one, is getting an education, and at the same time is getting a scholarship so that the money that is necessary to pay for that education does not come from them. And at the same time, the child hopefully will get a good job and may even get a draft into the NBA or the NFL, well, we'll make the necessary income so that the parents themselves who have struggled to try to keep their kids there will be rewarded. Yeah, brother, it seemed like you wanted to ask a question or continue with a question.
Well, the only comment I was making was when you said how the schools have failed us, it reminded me of what Dr. Carter G. Woodson said. When you control a man's thinking, you don't have to worry about his behavior. And that has certainly proven to be very true in our case. No, but continue on. Did you want to make one or two more points before we go back to the question of, you know, what is the economic future of the black community now? You've given us some framework for understanding community. So let's begin to draw some conclusions about, well, what does the economic future of the black community look like?
In the path, to address your question, in the path that we are moving, it doesn't look bright. But then again, the path that we are moving is a consequence of the propaganda that is constantly thrown at us. The black press is trying to do their part, but then they again can only do what is necessary based on the material that they receive and the intimidation that they receive in order to get certain kinds of news through and not necessarily talk about other news. The media is heavily controlled by members outside of our community. Interestingly, and this is not a secret, and this is not anti-Semitic to say this, but we know that in banking, in media, the Jewish members of the Jewish community are well endowed, and they make excellent use of it to enhance themselves for a population that is about one-third to one-half the size of the African-American population in this country, probably even less. And they were discriminated against, so we have no need to say that they have not experienced some problems in this white Anglo-Saxon environment, but they have been able to, because of pooling their resources together and seeing what has economically can be benefited by certain control of industries, and they have used it, you know, the banking industry and, of course, media, where they're very much endowed, legal, they're very much involved. And so we see this, and they have strategically set out to lay out a path for themselves. Unfortunately, because we as Africans are constantly engaged in the survival, not having the access to various capital that is necessary to build industry, or really, if we have the access, do not have a plan on how to effectively use what we have obtained. So we're always in a catch-up mode. We're in a catch-up mode while other folks are accelerating. We have to think very seriously about this because the U.S., which is owes to everybody, cannot sustain its brand of capitalism very long. And some have forecast, you know, before the middle of this century has passed, that the United States will definitely suffer as a consequence. And now for the 45 million of us that are currently here, probably that population hopefully will expand. Our leadership and our people must make ways, all right, in order to alleviate the conditions that I just described. Not always, you know, better schools, definitely. We must take control of the schools and introduce a curriculum that teaches us to go beyond just a job, but the owners, industry, producers, that's what we have to create. And I guess we can talk more about that now. And I'll stop here because I know that you may want to. There may be some listeners that might want a question, or there might be something that you want to follow up on.
And thank you, Brother Shabaka. And as you were speaking, I'm reminded that history doesn't record any other group of people that were enslaved for as long as the enslaved Africans were in this country, 500 years, and no group has suffered the damage to its cultural infrastructure to the degree that we have. So loss of language, loss of family ties, loss of rites of passage, loss of all of the things that give a community a sense of wholeness and a sense of who they are. So it is not surprising the amount of fragmentation and disruption that we see in our community. But let's pause and let's just see if there are any questions at this point. Again, to join the conversation, dial 929-477-2789, and on your pin pad, press the number 1. That will raise your hand in the studio, and we'll see you. We'll open your line and entertain your questions and your comments. Again, 929-477-2789, and press the number 1. We're going to take a brief music break, and when we come back on the other side of the break, we're going to continue our focus on this question of what is the economic future of the Black community, and how do we prepare our children to navigate the present situation that we find ourselves in. And we're back. Welcome to Dare to Win, the Us Lifting Us Thursday night weekly radio program, where we discuss taking control of the economic destiny of our people and how to do it. My name is Brother Kimbizi, and we're here this evening with Brother Shabaka, an Us Lifting Us board member, who before the break painted a rather bleak picture of the Black community. Brother Shabaka, how can we correct things, and what can we positively pass down to our children?
Well, brother, let me again thank you for raising that. In order to complete my thinking, and as I was trying to illustrate the problem, let me ease into that by giving some more information that I think we need to seriously take and consider. One, we live in the United States of America that has a system, a two-tier system, one for the elites, so so that they can sustain what it is that was passed down to them, and they're one that service the elite. And, of course, as a race of people, we've been placed in the second category. All right. But in order to do that, there has to be something in their educational system and training of us which allows them to be somewhat successful, even though we resist some of the things that we are experiencing from them. One, we have to realize and come to grips that we lost our language, we lost our culture, how we celebrated our heroes, our ancestors, all that has been taken away from us, and only remnants has been as we researched and got some of this. Right? But we've been essentially instructed to be clones of whites. All right, now, when you look at that, that means then, you know, that a clone is almost like a copy. Your original copy has all of the information in it, and as you clone or copy it, you know, it gets less and less of the qualities from the original. And so by cloning us, all right, us being cloned, we're being removed from this, which has been what we consider a hierarchy, which is the European model, the European him and herself. So we're being cloned. Majority of us, the overwhelming majority of us, 98, 99% of us, stay in America. Very few of us have had the capability to travel outside of the U.S. Therefore, we are caged in. So all of the propaganda that we receive, regardless of how successful of a business person you may have, you're using a model that not necessarily will benefit the majority. Now, I don't want to make it appear that I'm knocking people who are successful because they're in a survival mode, because odds were stacked against them to be as successful as they may be. All right, but I wanted to reemphasize the fact that we're trying to create something that benefits the majority of folks, where at one time we did. All right, the majority of us did benefit from an economy that we created that was beneficial to all. It didn't exploit and leave over 70% of that economy in dire needs. It benefited us. So therefore, as servants, we cannot benefit from that. We have no expression politically, economically. We cannot make decisions that affect us any better. So we're sort of like in a political cage, you know, and with the violence that you see perpetrating throughout our community, and the things that are from outside that comes in, and we respond to those things, keeping us always in an unstable condition. Being unstable makes it extremely difficult for us to sit back and plan. All right, not saying we can't. It makes it difficult for us to sit back and plan. So we're always in a mode that makes it extremely difficult. The other thing is the propaganda machinery, which is thrown at us all every day, constantly. The American dream, middle class living, having a car out, two or three car garage, out in the suburbs, you know, enjoying the life, commuting to work, you know, having a 2.1 children, happy married couples, although the divorce rate is going through the roof. We buy into that. Well, we buy into that because we have no other as a group now. Some of us do, but as a group, we have no other information about how we should live and how we can sustain a healthy socioeconomic condition in the community or neighborhoods that we live. All right, so we have the illusion of success, and this is extremely important. The illusion of success was made by a redefining of the middle class, where middle class at one point was associated with your ownership, control, or access to wealth, which is different from a dollar now, to just having a good job, a college degree, and nowadays being heavily in debt as a consequence of having a job, six figures maybe, but you are probably in debt to almost seven figures. All right, so we live this illusion because we want to feel good about ourselves. We all want to feel good about ourselves. All right. We wanna be like what Miss Ann, Mr. Charlie are. They seem to be having vacations, traveling, have lots of money. We wish that, you know, because we have suffered so severely. All right, but as individuals, a few of us may acquire that, but as the collective, the majority of us will not. And so, according to Dr. Claude Anderson, you can refer to him because he's been pioneering, and he brings up, you know, as an economist, he brings up a lot of information. And according to him, just to give you an idea, he says on the eve of the Civil War, about 98% of whites, all right, about 98% of whites believed that blacks should not be freed from slavery. That's 98%. Currently now, he says that according to polling conditions, all right, polling have revealed that at least 88% of whites dislike, you know, African blacks here in the U.S. All right, so he says that there's only been 10% subsiding in the 150 years, you know, since the Civil War ended of whites. So still a majority of whites still don't want to have anything to do with blacks, so we cannot depend on them. Although, for some reason, we're looking for the good white person who can come in and help us, the good politician who can come in and set things straight. The good banker who's going to make everything well for us, the good insurance company that's going to give us a break on our mortgage, we're still looking for that, and we're not looking within. We're so busy looking outside in our survival mode, we don't look in on the qualities that we have. So according to, again, Dr. Anderson, very difficult to integrate these communities, and we are pushed to integrate. You know, he says by the time we get to 5 or 6% whites move out, and the next thing we know, we got a predominantly African American community as we move away from that. Now, think about that for a minute. As your community leaves you, all right, particularly the skilled people in your community, what does that do to the members who remain, who doesn't have those skills and maybe required some direction from leadership who have those skills? What you have is the development of an impoverished neighborhood. Definitely we can't call it a community because all of it goes out. And you were speaking a little bit earlier about being separated and scattered. All right, when we get the jobs, we usually have to leave our neighborhoods. All right, and sometimes our state. All right, think about that now. So families are separated as a consequence of us pursuing jobs away from the neighborhoods that we were born into. All right, so the skills that is necessary to build that community are taken away. All right, as we move out, and now as we get to be about 5 or 6% of the population of where we move to, they move out. And so we're in this quagmire of always trying to please, prove that we are human, that we are intelligent, while at the same time it's not in their DNA or not in their interest to accept us as that. Boyce Watkins said, in order to change this, we got to do at least three things. He calls it, he has this black business school online. He says he called it the Black Core of Three. And this is what he says we have to do.
Say that again.
The Black core of three, the black core
okay.
of three. All right. First, we got to educate our own children. First thing we have to do, we have to create our own jobs and create our own businesses. All right. If we have others doing it for us, then we're serving those people, all right, whose interests might not necessarily parallel with ours. All right. So if we take
let you pause
yes.
right there for a
yes.
second, Brother Shabaka. Educate our own children. How might we go about doing that? What have you seen any effective models that can be replicated across the country by any chance? Or what
yeah,
suggestions
we have,
would you make?
We have independent black schools. They're not many. All right. And, of course, these are private schools, and they have a very powerful curriculum. The problem is, again, as we move throughout this society in our survival modes, and, of course, the propaganda machinery instruct us not to necessarily use the revenues that we acquire, income that we acquire, and invest it in these schools that have good curriculum and can train us. Boyce Watkins has a very good black business school model that he has on the internet where you might pay $50,000 if you're going to or more per year, schools at MIT and Harvard and what have you. He's offering from his experience very easy payable courses online that one can take with $3 or $4 a day, all right, which is within us. Now, we have to know that is important as opposed to, going out here buying clothes with our pants hanging down and some of the sisters, with, fingernails, toenails, weaves, and all this other kind of stuff. I'm not knocking those. It's just that those things doesn't help us economically as a group. It may address your individual needs and aspiration, but it doesn't help us collectively as a group. And that's because you haven't been trained into cooperative and collective economics. And so, yes, we have the models out here, but the models are not being funded because our interest is being drawn towards those things which makes us feel good, all right, to deal with our immediacy and to deal with our hurt by made to view us as subhumans, inhuman, and the brutality that we constantly experience day to day, whether on the job or not having a job. All right. So, yes, there are some models. There are independent schools just about African schools. There are some that are associated or connected to the school system, charter schools they call, but they have a certain degree of autonomy that they can have a way of providing a curriculum that does address the needs of having our folks build community as opposed to just getting a job. The problem is that our historical black institutions, those who leave that school system and travel to our black historical institutions, learn then again how to get a job as opposed to how to make jobs. So we have a disconnect, and we really have to hit them. And in terms of the model that you have, other than Boyce Watkins, and I think I've heard that Umar Johnson is opening up a similar school system in the Philadelphia, Delaware area that's not online, but he may be dealing with some online material courses, which, again, lay down a foundation to make us owners and producers and entrepreneurs and cooperative economics. Pooling our resources and doing these things together. But that's
let me pause you right there just for a second.
Yes.
We have a caller.
Yes.
want to get them in to either make a comment or raise a question, caller with the last four digits, 8912. I'm going to open your line. Would you tell us where you're calling from? Give us your name and where you're calling from, and make your comment or state your question. 8912, your phone is open.
Yes, this is Brother Thurman. I'm calling from Richmond, Virginia. And I thank you all for the information that you're providing. And I know you all in the last part of the hour going to get into what Ulu Us Lifting Us provides to as a solution, because the solution is there. We just have to activate it. It's just like wellness and cancer. You know, there's no need for the cancer society to seek out some drug. There's already a solution there. We just have to use what's available. And there are across the countries, the East Coast, West Coast, schools that are having excellent progress in terms of properly educating our children, and they're having outstanding academics. You know, Brother Baruti in Atlanta, and others, D.C., Washington, Compton, California. And we've got to have the courage, and then we've got to encourage the ones that are not stepping forward to join in with us, with the schools, with Us Lifting Us, to have the courage to stop embracing all of the Europeanized madness. And so as you talked about how many percentage of the whites that don't desire to deal with us, all of that should be emergency signals when you talk about that to our mind and say we got to get busy and unite and pool our intellectual and financial resources and we can get out of this mess. Thank you so much.
Thank you, brother, for your comments.
Thank you for calling, Brother Thurman.
Yes.
Brother Shabaka, we're up against the next break. When we come back from this break, we'll talk about how Us Lifting Us offers a solution, and we'll talk further. This is Us Lifting Us Economic Development Cooperative, LLC, weekly radio broadcast, Dare to Win, where we say it's time to take control of the economics of our community so we can be liberated and sovereign. Brother Shabaka, in the time that we have remaining, please tell our listeners this evening how Us Lifting Us takes the position that only a cooperative economy that is family-centered and group or collectively owned can make the difference that we need.
Thank you, brother, for that question. And if the listening audience, family members, recall, we had said earlier, you know, about the significance of our children, our youth, not receiving the education to pioneer into this new environment where we are in control. We also talked about, and I mentioned briefly, but it's very important that a lot of us, when we do get jobs, are relocated very far from our support base, our family. And so we're breaking up the family, all right? The community breaks up. And so what you have are all of the talents that is necessary in order to build an economy, all right, are drawn away from our communities, all right, and leave the communities to what we call ghettos today or hood or all the other stuff. What Us Lifting Us does, all right, is saying that we want to reverse this process, all right, but we know that we can't reverse this process unless we have the necessary material resources, all right, to reverse the process. Because if you're pulling away from your family because you need a job, that's economics, all right? If your family is splitting because members of your family are unemployed and you cannot stay together, all right, you must do things, that's economics, all right? All right, but now if you reverse that, we want to use the economics, the family-centeredness in the economics to pull you back together. So how do we do that? Well, we've done that before, and there's been examples in the past, examples now that are doing that but are not necessarily successful. If you look at the churches are a good example of attempting to apply cooperative economics. Unfortunately, there are some leaderships in some of the churches, not all of them, you know, who have this pimp prostitute kind of behavior also. All right, and so they're not doing well in order to create the kind of environment that we would like. So, but they create a model, and their folks come together. Their congregation members come together, pool their resources. In other words, take the money that they would normally spend and probably wasteful, and pool it together such that meaningful things can come out of that. So we have to have an effective way, and Ulu has an effective way for our people to pool their human, material, and financial resources. Once these resources are pooled, all right, then an effective way of building a business infrastructure that is owned and controlled by Ulu members. All right, we want to teach you to become owners. All right, and then once you become members and create the businesses, then we want you to take these businesses and begin to address the needs of the community. All right, in pooling the resources and developing businesses, we want to build and operate for-profit co-ops. We want these co-ops to be managed by member workers. The ownership will be, the total ownership will be the membership. We want to grow large scale. We want to develop industries from growing large scale, all right? And we want to stimulate activities such that we can develop the means by which to address what we see in our community as unhealthy behavior, from how we behave towards each other to what we put in our stomach, all right? We need to reverse, revolutionize how we're doing things now. All right, and Ulu lays out a model by which we can do that. And so the pool of our resources, using those resources that we pool together to develop for-profit business co-ops, and then from the business co-ops, then when those business co-ops, and we examine what co-ops we want to develop so that when we acquire a profit from these co-ops, then that profit is redistributed to Ulu members, and of course, it will benefit the community. The more of the members in the community that we pull in Ulu, the more jobs that we can create. The jobs that's created are owner workers, all right? So the workers are not the owners, and they have a democratic process by which they have influence and control over the operation of the businesses that are created. And so this is the model. Information is on our website, in which you can learn about this model. And that website is usliftingus.com. That's us, U-S, lifting, L-I-F-T-I-N-G, us.com. All right. Go to the website. We have a number of introductory materials on that. It tells you about that. We have videos on that that explain our position. In the weeks to come, we're going to be updating that website to provide more information. We have a members only, so that members, because when you become a member, you lay the foundation by which you can become a stakeholder. All right, membership dues are $50. $50, you can spend that in a few days sometime. So we're talking about $50 a year. And of course, we have a plan that helps elevate you so that you can buy shares. It's only when you get the shares that now you reap the benefit, dividends, as some people call, a distribution of the profits that's been made by the particular business that you are supporting, that all of us support. And we have various ways to get that. Our share fee is $1,000, but we know that for some people may be heavy. And so we have various packages by which you can buy $35, $50, and $100 subscription each month to build up to that $1,000. So once you've got that, you got a share. You can think of it as you want, like a unit or share, as you might think in a for-profit business. That's a corporation. And so as those businesses become mature, developed, and successful, you will reap the benefit of those, whether you are directly associated with that business or not, because it is the collective as a co-op that owns that business. All right. More of that information is on our website, usliftingus.com. If you have questions, you can, email us at info@usliftingus.com. And so we're there. We'd like you to check us out. We want you to ask questions. I want you to be critical of us, because I may be asking you something that may be foreign or something that you are not too familiar with. And of course, there is that trust factor, being in the U.S., being subjected to the kind of conditions for several centuries, you can't help. And of course, there's been collaborators in order, to benefit themselves individually. All right, so yeah, there's a trust factor, but we do our accounting and we make ourselves extremely visible and transparent because we understand what you've been through, because we have been through it. So we'd like you to look us up, check us out, ask questions, go to the website, call us, and let us know what you think. If you need to call us, 404-592-2780. All right, we'll get back to you. Answer the phone right away. Yes, sir.
Brother Shabaka, as you laid it out, it's very clear why we call this program Dare to Win. The solution to all the things that we've discussed tonight are in our hands. We don't have to ask anybody. We don't have to march. We don't have to petition. All we have to do is dare to win. And so you had mentioned that Dr. Boyce Watkins talked about this black core of three: educate our own children, create our own jobs, create our own businesses. Us Lifting Us does all of that. And everyone has the opportunity to participate. Not only do they get the benefit of receiving dividend checks when the businesses become profitable, but every member has one vote in the decision-making that guides all of these cooperative businesses. So it is truly democratic. So for the first time, well, I won't say for the first time, but once again, after centuries of being out of power, we have an opportunity to empower ourselves. So, Brother Shabaka, thank you so much for being with us, sharing your expertise and your experience and your knowledge with us, helping us to think about the condition that we're in and exactly what it is that we're going to leave our children, and making it clear so that we see that this is something that we can do. We've done it before, and now it's time we can hear the ancestors calling us to do it again. I want to thank Brother Thurman for calling in. I want to remind our listeners that we're here every Thursday evening from 9 to 10 on Blog Talk Radio, Dare to Win. Next week, bring a friend. Tell them, sit down with me and listen to this information that will lead us to liberation and sovereignty. So we're going to sign off at this point. Have everyone to have a very powerful week. Let's dare to win together. If you haven't become a member, go to the website, hit the join button, and let's surge forward together.